So the first time he worked with the director, Barry Jenkins, things worked out pretty well, as you probably know. In addition to receiving 8 Academy Award nominations, the picture eventually won 3 Oscars, including the one for the Best Picture of the Year. Well, one of those nominations went to its composer, and for his second film for Barry Jenkins, he just received his second Oscar nomination, the Oscar-nominated score, If Beale Street Could Talk, by Nicholas Britell. And I suppose, you know, James Baldwin would have used the phrase Eden rather ironically. Because, you know, it's, in many ways it is, but in many ways it was anything but.
Exactly. I think one of the things that Barry and I focused a lot on throughout the film is the complexity of all of these emotions that are in the film. I think the idea of love and joy, you know, because right at the beginning of the film, we're hearing that piece, Eden Harlem, and you know, there's a feeling of joy, and there's a feeling of love and beauty. But I think, in a way, every emotion has its own opposite within it. Love and joy are what they are because also there's the idea that they won't last forever, and that's actually why that emotion is so powerful in a strange way. And I think the film evolves, you know, over the course of the film. It deals with love, but it deals with injustice. And the way that we approached the injustice was, in a similar way, was a direct evolution of the musical ideas of love and harming them. And Barry would say, how do we break these sounds? So I would actually take the cellos, for example, in the piece Eros, which is from a moment of love. It's the moment when Tish and Fanny first make love, and distort and morph and harm the sound until it almost sounded like a horrific doppelganger of itself. And that gave us a sort of roadmap for exploring the ideas of injustice in the film. So I agree with you that there's a duality to everything in the film. It deals strongly with love, but it also deals just as strongly with injustice.
Exactly, exactly. The film is, If Beale Street Could Talk, based on a story by James Baldwin. The film by Barry Jenkins, for which Nicholas Britell just got his second Academy Award nomination. Nicholas Britell, welcome back to KUSC.
Thank you so much for having me here. I love speaking with you about this.
I don't really think of a film that could be too much different in its look, in its content, in the way it moves, the way it's put together from your last film with Barry Jenkins. I mean, it's a totally different kind of thing. And in fact, the only two things it really has in common is Barry Jenkins and you.
Well, you know, the continuation of our process was something that I was so looking forward to. But you're right. I mean, I think both Barry and I, when we're starting a new project, we have no idea where we're going to wind up, you know, especially with the music. And I think that's what's exciting about different projects. Like, I really look for different projects so that you can explore a whole new world each time. Each movie is its own entity and deserves its own completely independent treatment, I think. So the commonality from before is really the process that we have, which is this, you know, very, very close kind of collaboration where Barry and I get in a room together and we will spend days together just watching the film and experimenting. And I think that's really what I love most is that kind of sense of shared discovery where the movie's kind of teaching us what it needs. It is such a subtle thing where you can, you know, you take an early sequence from the film when they're early, you know, just in the early stages of cutting it, and you just watch it with no music, and you can just play an instrument, just play a note. You know, let's say you take a clarinet note, you put it up against the picture. Some movies just absorb that note, and it's hard to explain why, but okay, the clarinet is somehow part of this story. And then some movies, you play a clarinet, and you immediately like, wow, that's not anything about this film. You know?
Exactly.
And it's very subconscious, those thoughts. Yeah.
And it also requires a director who knows something about how music can help the picture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the openness to the different ways that music can function in a film. And I think the key to a lot of that is a sense of honesty with your own feelings. And, you know, Barry knows what he wants to feel. And however we get there, you know, the way in which we find those things, what actually is that causes a certain feeling, that we don't know. We're going to find that. But he knows what he wants to feel. And as a composer, you know, that's so helpful for me, because Barry says to me, for example, with the piece Eden, you know, he said, we need to feel joy here. This is this beautiful moment, and we have to feel joy. And so, you know, my task is to say, okay, how do I take 12 notes of a scale and instruments, and how do I try to evoke that feeling? And so, you know, I go off, and similarly, it's a very kind of unconscious almost process where you're trying to find a very deep sense of a feeling, and you're searching yourself. I don't intellectually say, oh, I know these chords can do this. You know, I mean, I think we all have ideas of technique and things like that, but that's not really, I think, where the truth of that comes from.
No, no, it never does.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear some more music from If Beale Street Could Talk, the Oscar-nominated score by Nicholas Britell. Eros, and the perfect name for this cue. I mean, it was perfect. It was a great scene.
Thank you.
Great
well,
scene.
And you know what's interesting is we were very consciously trying to evoke the different kinds of love throughout the film, and so that's why we actually named many of those cues after the ancient Greek words for love. So there is this track Agape for the divine unconditional love. There's a track Eros for erotic love. There's a piece Storge. There's a piece Philia. You know, each of those phases of love, because we really were thinking about that. You know, the movie deals with so many kinds of love. It has this kind of pure love. It has erotic love. It has the love the parents feel for their children. It has friendship and brotherly love in that sense. And I think, you know, the love is what enables strength through all of the hardship that happens and gives hope, even in the light of what is very clearly a terrible, horrific injustice.
Yeah, exactly. One of the trickiest things about a picture set in a time other than our own is, number one, you want to do something to kind of evoke the time, but you also want to kind of stay true to the fact that the picture is being made in our time. And it's kind of a very narrow tightrope to walk.
Absolutely. It's always fascinating on each film because I think, you know, one of the powers of source music and well-chosen source music is that it can speak directly to a time and a place. But interestingly, in If Beale Street Could Talk, the music that you're hearing often on the record players, because there's a lot of music that's in the world of the characters, it's not from the early 70s. It's actually from a decade or more earlier. You know, there's the Blue and Green, for example, Miles Davis. You know, we're not always hearing like 1973 New York there. You know, it's actually earlier. And I think that these artistic kinds of choices are things that, again, it goes back to that feeling of the emotion. You sometimes do want to directly say, this is exactly this time and this place. But often, I think, with a film, it's about the feeling. And for me and for Barry, we have no preconceived notion of what that sound will be. Obviously, you know, Barry and I, when we first talked about the score, you know, we know where the film is set. And there's a question of, you know, what is... is there a sound of kind of like mid-20th century jazz? Is there a sound of New York in the mid-20th century? But that's really just sort of an intellectual starting point. And a lot of the conversation comes from Barry's first instincts. So what he first said to me was that he was hearing in his mind brass and horns. And that was before he shot the film. I'd read the book, I read the script, you know, but what's so awesome about Barry is he has that feeling. And it doesn't mean that's where we're going to wind up. But that's where we're going to start.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went off and I started exploring flugelhorns and French horns and trumpets and cornet, and I wrote some pieces. And I remember I wrote a piece. This was before I saw any footage. And I played it for him, and he really loved the piece. And then when we put it up against the picture early on, it just wasn't quite right. It was missing something. And what we discovered was that it was missing strings. It was missing cellos in particular. And the cellos were our way into the love. But interestingly, that piece that I first played is one of the bonus tracks on the CD. It's a piece called Harlem Aria, because the melody of that piece, the harmonies of that piece, wound up throughout the film, even though that exact version of it was never in the film.
Well, for the benefit of anyone who hasn't seen this beautiful little film, I don't want to say a beautiful little film. I mean, it's not like a Transformer movie, okay? But it's a big, serious drama. This extremely likable and appealing couple, African-American kids, they fall in love. And then, unaccountably, he is accused of raping a white woman, of which he is absolutely innocent. But being 1972, and being the fact that a cop and a witness say, you know, yeah, he's the one that did it, he goes to jail. And there's kind of a suppressed anger also running through the whole film. And there is a touch of that in the score as well. There's kind of a rumbling
yes.
of something that's not quite right, you know, throughout, as it should not be.
Exactly. There's an anger at injustice. And I think we go on the journey with Fani. We see what's happened to him and we have to feel that. And I think that was definitely a lot of the conversation that I had with Barry was initially many of those scenes of injustice, whether it's the moment that Daniel is telling Fani about his experience in prison and Fani himself is realizing the potential horrors of unjust imprisonment, whether it's the moment where we see Tish talking to Hayward, the lawyer. You know, some of these scenes didn't have score, actually. I think the initial instinct was the horror of that is so clear and palpable in the performances that we don't need to comment on that. And I think it's always very important to be very careful with score and certain types of emotion because you never want to push an emotion. But what's beautiful about the way that Barry approaches these things is he will say, we're not going to tell you the emotion. We actually are trying to have music that conveys the actual experience of that emotion. So, for example, instead of writing, let's say, a piece that sounds sad, we're not going to do that. We are actually going to say, let's make a piece that feels literally like the feeling of horror, like something emerging from the floorboards, like something that's hellish. And that was our way in, where I would distort and bend and harm the music. And similarly, the sound that you hear when you see Officer Bell, you hear this almost kind of siren, this grating alarm kind of like sound. And what that is, it's a saxophone note that was recorded not for that moment, but that I would then take and stretch and bend and distort. And then it became this abrasive sound. And that became our sort of sonic identifier for Officer Bell. And those were the kind of things that, you know, on Moonlight, I think Barry and I first started developing a little bit of this idea of potentially like musical symbolism. For example, when Chiron goes into the school to fight back and, you know, you're hearing a percussion hi-hat, and the sound of that hi-hat, that tapping, is actually the sound of him and Kevin high-fiving on the beach in a happier moment. And so there's this symbolism of now this isn't that moment, but it's almost like in his mind that sound is there. And similarly, I think here the idea of having there be a connection between different moments in the story, literally in the music. So you're actually taking the music in one place and you are kind of trying to transform the music in the same way that the story is transforming the characters. That's at least what we were hoping to do. And we do a lot of experiments where it doesn't always work, you know, and we try to be really honest with ourselves about that. You know, it's not just because an idea sounds cool doesn't mean it has the potential of working. But I think because we spend so much time together, we give ourselves the room to experiment.
Yeah. Oh, you can tell. You can tell that even now, after just two pictures, you've kind of worked out this mystical, almost, shorthand that it is very rare among, you know, directors and musicians. Sometimes directors, they don't realize how much a film can be helped by music. And it's as if I get music to help it, I've somehow screwed up my job. You know?
And what's interesting with Barry, I mean, he loves music. Barry loves music. He loves music outside of film. He loves music in film. But I think the way that he approaches, let's say, the music department in film, in his films, is similar to the way that he approaches all the departments. He's so open to everybody bringing their ideas. There's nothing that he won't look into. You know, so no matter what the crazy idea, I can say, you know, Barry, here's this idea. I have no idea. And he'll just say, show me. He'll say, "Show me, Dr. Bertel." And I was like, "Okay, here you go. Here you go." And that's that kind of openness where when you're open like that, anything's possible, and we don't limit ourselves. There really are sort of no rules. Because in a lot of ways, too, I think film scoring, you know, there are no rules. Like, you're watching a visual story, and there's no rule of where music goes, what kind of music you put there. And I think, in a way, I mean, it's very humbling in a sense, too, the power, but also the acknowledgement that there's sort of an infinitude of ways you could approach this. And so you just set out on your own course. You know, Barry says brass and horns, and then we just sort of start from there.
Yeah. Well, not to contradict you, Dr. Bertel, but there is there is one standing rule of film music that started in the 1930s and continues to this day. The one and only rule, serve the picture.
Yes, that is the only rule. And actually, that's a great point, because when we know that we've reached a place that works when we feel it and when we're honest. And that's, I think, that point of honesty. It's honesty for the picture. The movie is in charge. And actually, Adam McKay says that too. You know, when I get to work with Adam, who's amazing as well, you know, he always says, the film's going to win.
Yes.
The film's going to win in the end, you know? We're all there for the movie. And I think the wonderful thing with Barry is we're all seeking to make the film the best it can be. And I am trying to reach the feelings that Barry wants in his film.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the architecture there, I guess.
Well, this time, obviously, it worked again. And of course, when Barry Jenkins calls you Dr. Bertel, I mean, he's just being a wise guy.
He's just joking around. Yeah, I'm not a doctor.
But you are a Harvard graduate.
Yes, I went to Harvard for undergraduate, and I went to Juilliard for the pre-college division. I was a piano performance major there and studied harmony, counterpoint, solfege, composition there. I actually started learning to play the pipe organ when I was in high school as well at Juilliard.
Oh, excellent.
I love the pipe organ. And at Harvard, I studied psychology. In fact, I took music classes, and I began scoring a friend's film, and I joined a hip-hop band, actually a live instrumental hip-hop band. But for my concentration, it was psychology, and one of the wonderful things that Harvard let me do at the time was you could propose in the psychology department classes where you would meet one-on-one with a professor on a subject of your choosing, and I was able to, for example, propose a class, let's say, on neuromusicology, where we would meet up and read through research and papers on how the brain understands music and things like that. And I would always try to kind of angle my psych papers around music and the brain.
Yeah, yeah. And at Juilliard, you studied with?
Jane Carlson, who was just a legend and taught me so much, both just as a person, I think, and as an incredible musician. I mean, it was amazing, too, having, you know, hearing her stories. She knew Hindemith, for example, and
sure.
would just tell me about hanging out with Hindemith, you know, and it just blew my mind having that kind of a connection to music. But she was really a piano teacher in that sort of grand tradition where it was as much about the mindset, I think, of the music and what did it mean as much as it was about technique. Because, I mean, I think sometimes there is so much technique that you have to learn, but I think there's an entire perspective in a way that I learned from her about what is this piece saying? What is really going on here, and how do you approach that? And I definitely feel that I learned so much from thinking in that way, and I do try to bring that to what I do today.
Yeah, and of course, film is one of those areas where composers get to do what composers have been doing since Bach's time.
Absolutely.
Which is to say, communicating with people, communicating real emotions.
Yes, and I think that's, for me, personally, that is what I love about this. Because I think that all arts are about trying to express human emotion through different means. And music in particular is such, you know, it's such an abstract form. I mean, it's literally these air pressure changes. It's frequencies that combine, you know, that generate direct, powerful emotion in us, which is incredibly mysterious why that is even the case. But I think for me, it is about that generation of emotion. And you have to learn a lot to know how to do things. You have to know how to write music. You have to know how to, you know, let's say, play an instrument. But I think that's just the starting point so you can get to a place where you can more freely create things that generate feelings.
Yeah. Well, you obviously have the hang of it. Nicholas Patel, who just got his second Academy Award nomination for If Beale Street Could Talk. Thanks for stopping in tonight again and again. Best of luck.
Thank you so much.
We'll be watching.
All right. Thank you.